So I want to move forward a little bit more now and talk about some of the distinctive moments, some of the distinctive points of the Bodhisattva life or the Bodhisattva career. And the most important thing, or the most significant moment in the life of someone who aspires to be a Bodhisattva, who wants to accomplish the Bodhisattva ideal, is described as, is known as, the arising of the Bodhicitta. The Bodhicitta is the will to awakening, it's the urge towards awakening. So, we might be living a very, very humdrum, self-referential life, and we come across the Bodhisattva ideal. We hear about the fact that there's this ideal whereby you can live not just for yourself, but actually to try and help all sentient beings. And we think, yeah, that's fantastic. I really want to do that. In fact, I am going to do that. So in Mahayana Buddhist terms, this is the arising of the Bodhicitta, which brings about a transformation in the life of the individual. No longer are they simply a humdrum, workaday person. They are, in fact, a cosmic being. You could almost say a cosmic being incarnated in a human body. They represent or they exemplify something of a higher order, something transcendent, which shines through them, and that one can feel by being in relation to them. I'm not going to embarrass him by mentioning his name, but I remember going to a talk on a retreat, or it's actually a Buddhist convention that I went on, and a senior colleague of mine gave this talk. I had never met this guy before, and he actually did and still does most of his work out in India, this man, and he'd been living, I think, out in India at that time for about 20 years doing various things. And he got up and gave this talk. I think it was only about a 20 minute talk or something like that, and I have to say, in a way, he wasn't a great speaker. He didn't really have anything that was all that original, or, you know, he didn't seem to have a particularly elevated understanding of, say, Buddhist philosophy or anything of that kind. He spoke quite simply and quite directly. But I remember listening to this man, and I honestly felt this is the voice of the Bodhisattva. I can feel the Bodhisattva through this person. So I'm not saying that this colleague, you know, is a cosmic Bodhisattva, but perhaps what I'm saying is that through him I sensed something of that flavour, or something of that flavour was expressed, was revealed through him. Something of the transcendent was communicated through him, at least to me. That's how I experienced it. Just to go back to the Bodhicitta once more, there's a very famous and celebrated text that describes the path and the life of the Bodhisattva, which is called the Bodhicharyavatara, a guide to the path to awakening, or a guide to the Bodhisattva's way of life. I'm sure some of you have read that, or at least come across it. In there, Shantideva describes the Bodhicitta in the following terms. He says, the Bodhicitta is the seed of pure happiness in the world and the remedy for the suffering of the world. So it's the most precious thing, elsewhere I think he describes it as the elixir of life. It's the essence of life itself, it's what brings about life, it's what gives life. So this is how precious the Bodhicitta is seen within the context of Mahayana Buddhism. And one way that my teacher Sangharaksha has spoken about the Bodhicitta is it were as though it's something that possesses the individual, as though one is taken over by this transcendent vision, this transcendent urge that wants to help all beings. It's greater than the ordinary self and guides the conduct of the ordinary self. This is the Bodhicitta. So the important thing is then to try to stimulate this, to try to bring this about, to try to give rise to the Bodhicitta. This is seen as supremely important in terms of the Mahayana Buddhist path. So how is this done? Well, there are a number of different ways that the bodhicitta can arise, but the one that I'd like to talk about briefly is called, and I'm sorry that I'm not writing these terms up, but you can get some notes afterwards and these words will be written on the notes, is through the what's called the Anuttara Puja. So puja means devotion, and Anuttara means unsurpassed or supreme, something of that sort. So the Anuttara Puja is the supreme worship. So what is that? Well, it can be a number of different things, but one of the ways that this is done is through a particular ritual. And within our, sorry if I'm talking about things that you're already familiar with, but I'm sure not everybody is. Within the context of our Buddhist tradition, we practice a particular ritual called the Sevenfold Puja, the Sevenfold Worship. And this is a particular form of the Anuttara Puja, the Supreme Worship. And actually our puja itself is closely based on the text, the Bodhicharyavatara that I mentioned a moment ago. But the key to the supreme worship, well, one could say, well, what is it that one is worshipping here? And I suppose ultimately one is worshipping, one could say, the awakening mind, which is to say the bodhicitta. One is reverencing that as being, as I mentioned a moment ago, the elixir of life, the most precious thing that one could possibly come into contact with. And so in the context of this ritual, one aims to, I would say, rehearse the stages of the bodhisattva life in the hope that through rehearsing those stages, one will give rise oneself to the bodhicitta. So one won't just be doing it as a ritual, one will be doing it for real. Or one could even say, to the extent that one is doing the ritual, one is doing it for real. The ritual is not something that's separate from the arising, the cultivation of the bodhicitta. The two things are the same. And so the ritual, the Sevenfold Puja, takes us through a series of moods, a series of stages that are geared towards stimulating the bodhicitta, and they culminate in the next thing that I want to come on to, which is what happens after we have cultivated the bodhicitta. Does anybody know what happens then? What happens when you cultivated the bodhicitta? Does anybody know? What happens? Okay, yeah, you take a vow, or you make a vow, or you give expression to a vow. And this is also seen as an extremely important kind of moment, or an extremely important ritual feature of the bodhisattva life. So once the bodhicitta has arisen, or even as the bodhicitta arises, the bodhisattva is so inspired and so committed to the process of universal awakening that he gives expression to a vow, which takes some kind of public form. There's many different forms of these vows, and if you read a number of different Mahayana texts, you'll come across different ones. But my personal favourite, or my personal favourites, is a particular set of vows that are found in a text called the Sukhavati Sutra. And in this text, depending on how you count it, there are 47 or 48 vows. They're not just one, 47 or 48. And in fact, usually the bodhisattva vow is more than one. You know, there might be 10 or 12 or 4 different lists. I think you'll be relieved to hear that I'm not going to read out all 48. I'll just read out one. And this is known as the 18th vow. And this is a very, very famous vow that's found in a text called the Sukhavati Sutra. So a bodhisattva in that text, who's called Dharmakara, he makes this vow. And it's a little bit technical, so try and stay with it, and then I'll perhaps explain it afterwards. Blessed one, may I not awaken to unsurpassable, perfect, full awakening if, after I attain awakening, those living beings in other world spheres who conceive the aspiration to attain unsurpassable, perfect, full awakening, hear my name and remember me with serene trust, will not be met by me at the moment of death. If I should not stand before them then, surrounded and honoured by a retinue of monks, so that they can meet death without anxiety. So it actually takes quite a complex grammatical form, which you may not have followed. But in brief, what the Bodhisattva is saying is that basically, unless after I've gained awakening, all beings who call on my name will be reborn in a perfect world that I've created, unless that happens, then I'm not going to gain awakening. That's how committed I am to this process. I don't want awakening unless, when it happens, all beings who call upon me can also become awakened. And those of you that know a little bit more about these things, the being that made these vows, at least in this text, went on to become Amitabha Buddha, or Amida Buddha, who's the figure on the shrine before us, who we spoke a little about last week. So the fact that this Bodhisattva Dharmakara went on to become a Buddha, he fulfilled his Bodhisattva vow, the fact that that happened, according to some Buddhists, means that if we call upon his name, we will be reborn in an ideal world, what's called a pure land or a Buddha field, which is perfect for awakening when we die, or even before, depending on your point of view. And that way of thinking led on to a particular pattern of practice, a particular pattern of Buddhist practice, which is known as Pure Land Buddhism. I'm not going to develop that more just at the moment. Yeah, so that's the Bodhisattva vow. I don't think I'll read out any other forms of that just for the moment.